Bushfires continued to ravage parts of northern New South Wales this week, with more than 30 homes destroyed or severely damaged, and thousands of hectares of farmland and fencing also burnt out. It's nearly a month since the same fire ripped across the Hearts Farm, destroying more than 400 hectares, timber cattle yards, and kilometres of fencing. Edward Hart estimates the cost at around $100,000 to rebuild, buy and feed, and in lost production. And he says it could take years for his few hundred cattle to recover. He took our reporter Kim Honan for a drive around the property to show the extent of the fire damage.
It all happened very, very quickly. We were trying to move cattle that morning, get them into safer paddocks down onto like river country where it's short grass. We knew they'd be a bit safer there, and trying to get the houses prepared and wet the garden and things like that, sort of last minute preparations, but it all happened very, very quickly. So much smoke, it was very hard to tell where the fire was coming from exactly and when it was going to hit. But yeah, it was about 1 o'clock, and probably an hour later it had jumped the road and it was dropping sparks right next to the house really, and it just became a case of abandoned, trying to stop it getting through the property and just protect the houses and the sheds was all we could do.
How much damage did the fire actually do to the property?
Well, I think there's around about 1,000 acres that burnt. Very hard to put an exact figure on it, of course, but it goes in patches. But a lot of fencing has been burnt, and we've had 2 sets of timber yards burnt. And we think in the vicinity of about 15 kilometres of fencing that will have to be repaired, fairly extensively repaired, and 5 to 10 kilometres it'll be a total rebuild. It's just damage beyond repair, really.
So you've already started pulling out some of that damaged fencing?
Yeah, we have. Yep. We've been pretty busy doing that the last few weeks. We have been lucky enough to have a neighbour who has a small dozer, and he was great. He said, look, if you guys want some help, he'd come help us out. So that's been great. He started about a week ago, and he's been cleaning up a lot of the old fence lines because there were just fallen trees all over the place. Very hard to work to try and build a new fence and work machinery when there's just branches and trees everywhere. We've been amazed at how many big trees and big branches have come down after the fire. So yeah, he's been cleaning up the lines, and we're basically in the process of procuring fencing materials so we can start the rebuild. We've patched up what we can sort of quickly just to get a few paddocks stock proof, which has made things harder with the drought. Cattle were already hungry and we were already rationing the feed that we had, and now we've had to condense the cattle into those even smaller paddocks and trying to give them extra feed because what little feed they were getting in the paddocks is gone now. So that's sort of added an extra challenge on top. And some of those paddocks were very short on water, and now it's even worse. Like, some of those dams are nearly dry and we're about to start carting water to keep cattle going in some paddocks.
Are you now having to buy in more silage to feed your cattle?
We possibly will have to. We have a paddock of wheat that we were hoping to grow for grain, for our own cattle feed and to sell, basically something to get a bit of cash flow going. But with the dry, it's not going to make it through to grain, and we haven't been allowed to irrigate for quite a few months now. Yeah, that crop, we're just going to have to mow it, take what's there. Like, it's not very tall, but we'll just have to take what we can get and bale that. We had some help from local land services. They actually did send a truckload of hay to us, which has been a huge help. It was an emergency response to the fire. So we're feeding that to the cattle at the moment in the hope that it will rain in the next few months and we might get some grass growing.
What sort of impact is this fire likely to have on your animals?
I think it'll have a long-term impact. I think it'll take a few years, actually, for the effects to come through the pipeline sort of thing. I mean, the cattle were already not in great condition with the drought, and now losing even more of the pasture, or what was left of it really with the fire, they're just even hungrier. So we'll probably see a reduction in their fertility, and I mean, that is entirely what we do here is we breed calves. We don't fatten cattle or anything like that. We just breed calves and sell them at the weaner sales. So, if the cattle aren't in good health, they're not going to be cycling. They won't be going into calf this summer. And we'll see that next year, and we're going to have a lot less calves on the ground. It's going to make it that much harder to foot the bill for the rebuild process.
And so you're hoping to have Blaze Aid turn up here soon to help with putting up those fences?
Yeah, we had a visit from Blaze Aid, and they came and had a look around, and they said that they thought they would send some people down from Tenterfield. They got their base camp at Tenterfield, but they said they'd probably send some people down with caravans and they'll stay at our place, and we've said we're quite willing to provide the lunches and that sort of thing. So yeah, that'll be great. I mean, we appreciate any help we can get. It's that thing that many hands make light work, I suppose.
That's Edward Hart speaking on his Plains Station Road property in northern New South Wales. Well, it's been well documented that Australians have a record level of debt. More people are in mortgage stress than ever before, and there are doubts about whether the federal government's tax refunds will give any decent boost to the economy. And new data shows those in rural areas are struggling much more than their city counterparts with paying off debt and making ends meet. The ABC's Australia Talks survey found 41% of rural residents are struggling to pay debts, compared to 33% of those in inner metro areas. One third of Australians say they're having difficulties making ends meet, and that number's even higher in rural Australia. Now, Debbie Ann Wilmot knows that stress only too well. She owns a gift shop in drought-ravaged Stanthorpe in southern Queensland, and she's told Caitlin Gribben the ongoing poor season is robbing her of an income in the usually busy horticulture and wine town.
Now in the drought, people don't have the money to spend. It depresses them. They can't afford to shop, so they don't even want to look. And sometimes you just feel like a counsellor. You know, people come in and sort of need someone to talk to, and you just, sometimes you just go home depressed yourself, thinking, oh, these poor people, how are they just coping?
How do you think the drought has hit this town financially?
It's had a huge impact on the town. We've had small business close, and I'm sure if the drought keeps going, a lot more will close. And everybody's just sort of hanging on by the skin of their teeth. You know, you've still got your rent to pay, your phone, your electricity, everything else, all the bills have got to be paid, but there's nobody coming through the door. But I'm, worried about what the future holds. The farmers don't have money. They can't afford to employ people. They're now unemployed, so they don't have the money to spend. We're virtually relying on the tourists to keep us afloat and keep us going. Yeah, we're on a pretty tight budget, and some weeks you're lucky to even cover that. You know, it's getting pretty dire.
Is it possible to meet every bill, every loan repayment?
Not every week, no. No, some weeks you've got to ring your suppliers and say, you know, I haven't got the full amount. And a lot of them are understanding and will let you pay your account off. Some aren't as understanding. I think they deal with a lot of stores in the city. But, you know, they don't understand that we're in drought and we don't have the foot traffic coming through that we had in previous years.
How hard is it to make those phone calls in those bad weeks?
Some days it gets a bit upsetting, but generally on the whole, we try to work in together. I try to switch off when I get home and leave it here. Otherwise, if you take it all home with you, then it, you know, you don't sleep at night. You lay there wondering, how am I going to pay the bills? You just, you know, I've had to try to switch off and hope the next day's going to be a little bit better. Hope some visitors come to town and do some shopping.
There's lots of other businesses, as you mentioned, that are in a similar situation because of this drought, finding that it's hard to make ends meet. What does that mean? Because a lot of these businesses are family owned. So what does that mean for families, do you think?
You're right there. A lot of the businesses here, especially in Stanthorpe, are second and third generation, family owned. So it means that, you know, if you have to shut your doors, then you've got to go and find a job. Well, there's no work. It means you've got to move away. Then you're losing an employee that, or a business owner that's trained in something for 15, 20 years. You are losing your local soccer coach, you're losing a member of your service clubs, your Lions or your Rotary, and families leave, kids leave school, so your teacher numbers are down, teacher aid numbers are down, so it has a roll-on effect. It affects everything.
What about the practical sort of outcomes of something like this, like at home, food on the table, those sort of things?
we're much more cautious of what we buy, what we cook. You know, we're like everybody else. We, you know, watch our water, we watch what we're eating, and we try to support local farmers, you know, with the buying locally, to cut out the middleman so it goes directly to the farmers. And I think a lot more people need to do that to try and support our local industry. I think the government needs to help small business more. There's a lot of help out there for farmers and the rural sector, but there's nothing really to help small business in drought, in rural towns, just to stay afloat. So I think they need to broaden their financial help to where they're helping, and to help the small country towns, because they're going to be non-existent. The drought is a slow, silent killer, and it's a natural disaster. They need to realise that it is on the same level as floods and cyclones, and that we need help.
Debbie Ann Wilmot there sharing her story with Caitlin Gribben. Well, to a lighter story now. And how does rye cycling sound to you? The drinking straws you use in your fizzy drink or gin and tonic could soon literally be made of Australian-grown straw, replacing the need for plastic or paper ones. An Adelaide ag tech startup is making drinking straws from the hollow stalk left over after rye grain has been harvested. Now, the global demand for alternatives to plastic straws is huge, and some Australian farmers hope to replace them with, well, actual straw. Marty McCarthy reports.
When the fields have been harvested and the grain loaded and trucked away, that's when businesswoman Marion Bigot will be preparing for a unique harvest of her own.
We could make up to 300,000 straws with 1 hectare. So that's a lot of straws for 1 hectare. So if we want to replace the 10 million straws used every day in Australia, we would need a couple of hectares, but that's definitely possible.
Marion is the co-founder of Mr. Rye, an Adelaide-based startup with a pretty big goal.
We are aiming to replace plastic straws in Australia.
And why is that?
Well, because a single-use plastic ban is coming up soon next year in South Australia. We're hoping to offer these straws as a suitable alternative for South Australia first, but also for Australia as a second step.
She wants to make 1 million straws this year, made from the hollow stubble of rye. Straws made from the stems of wheat, rice and bamboo are already available in Australia, but they're imported from overseas.
Rye is a byproduct of the local agriculture, which means that we haven't grown rye for the purpose of being straws, but we're using something that is already there and currently not being used in order to replace a current issue, which is plastic pollution. So we're using rye also because it's a very strong plant. And following our studies and meeting with a researcher in plant breeding, we have noticed that rye is much stronger than other plants and very suitable to become straws.
The straws have a shelf life of at least 2 years and can be used in hot, cold, dairy and alcoholic drinks.
They can actually be reusable at home. So that's a very good thing. Like, you can put them in the dishwasher.
Really?
And they would come out as strong as you had them before. So it's a very strong material. Like, we've tested them several times. We've put them in the dishwasher. They will become a little bit soft because of the water, of course, but then you will dry them up and they will be exactly the same as before.
The first ever harvest of rye in Australia to be used as drinking straws will happen in December in South Australia's Riverland. Josh McIntosh, one of three farmers growing the crop to supply Mr. Rye, says being a certified organic farmer made him an ideal candidate for the startup to work with.
Yeah, because the grain's going to be processed in some way before it's eaten, but the straw, you'd be drinking through it, so it needs to be sure that there's no residue there at all.
How do you go about the harvesting of this? So this is the stubble that's left behind after you've harvested your regular rye.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you actually do? How is this process different?
We would cut the rye a bit higher, leave the straw longer, and take the grain off the top. We haven't sort of worked out a way to do it commercially yet, so we'd be hand harvesting it, but without damaging the structure of the straw as much as possible and sending it away for processing. Yeah, I'm sure mechanically it is a problem we could solve.
We might put the call out to any farmers or anyone in the ag industry if they know how to harvest your rye stubble for straws. Get in touch.
Yeah, sounds good.
Do you have an idea of the extra income you could gain by doing this?
Well, I don't think it's really an income thing for us. Probably not a lot of income value in straws. As far as I can tell, it is a labour-intensive operation, and so you kind of need the income to go to that side of it rather than the growing side of it. I mean, hopefully there'd be something there for us, but it might only be, you know, as small as an hour rate for sheaving the straws.
And so what's the main motivation to do it? You're an organic grower anyway. Is being environmentally conscious something that you factor into your business?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a byproduct. I wouldn't say it's a waste product because it's soil carbon at the end of the day, but it's a byproduct that we could be sparing for something like straws. I think it's a good idea.
The market for biodegradable and reusable natural straws is growing rapidly in Australia and around the world. Seattle in the United States banned plastic straws in 2018. Coffee chain Starbucks will stop using them by 2020. McDonald's in the UK and Ireland has announced it will phase them out too. And even Alaska Airlines is following the trend.
We're selling straws all over the world, not only to clients in Australia. We've got clients in Asia, in South and Northeast Asia, through the Middle East, Europe, UK. You know, we're selling everywhere and demand has been really, really positive.
That's David Smith, the director of Sydney-based Hay Straws Australia. He launched his company earlier this year and in less than 12 months has noticed demand for alternative straws skyrocket.
We're seeing a lot of hotel chains actually blocking the plastic straw from consumption within their outlets. So that's a big shift, and that's a lot of, you know, large hotel chains have done that globally. Probably the biggest country we've seen changing is India. You know, 1.3 billion people live in India, so they're scrambling for an alternative, and you know, we're shipping up there at a great rate at the moment.
It's a market that's only going to grow, according to Mr. Smith, given many companies and even entire cities, states and countries are moving to ban plastic straws. But he encountered a similar problem to Josh McIntosh.
As much as I'd love to do it all in Australia, it's a manual process, all done by hand.
High local production costs were one reason why Mr. Smith decided to source his hay from overseas rather than in Australia and produce the straws in China.
You know, our straws are hand-picked out of tons and tons of hay. The outer layer is peeled off, and then, they go through three separate washing, drying, cleaning processes to make them suitable for human consumption. And to do that in Australia, we just couldn't do it physically. As much as I'd like to, not make it economically viable for the end user.
Finding a cheap harvesting method is one of the challenges Ms. Vigo is hoping to solve with the extra funds Mr. Rye raises during an upcoming pre-selling campaign. As for how the straws hold up...
So this one you can use.
Okay. I've got a cup of water here.
Does it work?
It does work. Because it's a little bit narrower than a normal straw, you do have to work a little bit harder to get your drink up. But yeah, there you go.
And then I want to show you...
You're right
you...
about the strength. It is...
Yeah, it's strong, right?
Yeah.
Like it would crack if you put some strains on it,
yes.
Of course. But like everybody could crack any straws, really.
Yeah.
But if you use it properly as a straw and you don't bite it and you don't like crash it or anything,
yeah.
Well, you can reuse it and you can reuse it for quite a long time.
What a great story. It is always very uplifting to hear about the new things people are doing to combat waste and help the environment. We heard from Marion Vigo, that excellent package from Marty McCarthy. And you can head to the ABC Rural website if you'd like to check out some photos of those rice straws. Now, if you haven't had a shot at answering the questions as part of our Australia Talk series, it's not too late. Just head to the ABC News online and find out where you sit.